This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in to the Planet Microcap Podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's B-O-B-B-Y-K-K-R-A-F-T. You're listening to episode 16 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Before we get started with part two of the episode, Investing in Healthcare Microcaps, I wanted to catch you up on what we featured on StockNewsNow.com recently. We featured articles highlighting video interviews with the following companies: Aberdeen International Inc., AAB on the TSX, CopSync Inc., COYN on the NASDAQ, DDD Group, DDDGY on the OTCQX, Chanticleer Holdings Inc., HOTR on the NASDAQ, Biotime Inc., BTX on the NYSE market, and PowerStorm ESS, PSTO on the OTC, as well as a Wall Street View video interview with Chris Lahiji from LD Micro discussing the LD Micro Index. We also featured the following articles from the Microcap Review Winter Spring 2016 issue: a Q&A with Rick Rule from Sprott Global, Natural Resources Market Overview; Comparing Different Ways to Go Public in the U.S. by John Lowy; and Will Virtual Reality Really Replace the Smartphone by Sean Peasgood. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, we're picking up where we left off from my part one conversation with Jason Napadano from BioNap Inc. In part two, we talk about what Jason looks for when analyzing healthcare microcap stocks, his five C's of investing in biotechs, what he's learned from his experiences investing, and resources he uses to find new potential investing ideas. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 16 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy part two of my interview with Jason, but first, a word from our sponsor. If you're looking to find the next great microcap idea, join us for the third annual Growth Capital Expo, May 3rd through the 5th, 2016 at Caesars Palace in exciting Las Vegas. You will have the opportunity to meet and network with a who's who from the microcap stock market. The Growth Capital Expo combines education with networking and access to C-level executives. Early bird registration is now open. It's easy to register. Just go to growthcapitalexpo.com. See you in Las Vegas. In this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, we're picking up where we left off in part two in my interview with Jason Napadano from BioNap Inc. We're starting off with my guest background from part one.
Sure. So I was an undergraduate biochemistry and molecular biology major way back 20 years ago when I was at Virginia Tech, and always had a love for science, a passion for science. I actually worked in a lab for 2 years doing cancer research when I was at Virginia Tech, and then after Virginia Tech, I graduated and got a job with a biotech company. It was actually a medical diagnostic company, and spent 3 years working as a bench scientist in infectious disease and vaccine development. So always had a passion for science and an interest in science. But after, you know, 3-4 years or so of working on the bench, wearing a white coat and blue gloves, just wanted more, and, you know, wanted more excitement than the, you know, than the day-to-day monotony of doing bench science. So went to get an MBA, went to Wake Forest, got an MBA in finance, concentration in securities analysis and portfolio management, and always had an interest in the stock market. I would say if science was my first love, then the stock market was my second love. And when I graduated with an MBA, it just seemed logical to go and become a stock analyst covering biotech stocks. I mean, I had a background that not a lot of people had, which was a pretty good understanding of science and mechanisms and biology and chemistry. And then, obviously a solid background in finance and business operations with the MBA. So it just kind of found my career by various majors and loves for things through my life, and here I am. I've been doing this now for 16, 17 years, and I continue to enjoy it because I'm using, all of my education, and I'm doing what I love, which is kind of learning science and staying involved in science, but also, being involved in the market.
So I should probably put an asterisk there in saying, yes, it helps to have a biology and biochemistry degree, and maybe if you want to be an analyst, you probably should have gone to school for that. Also when you first got started in analyzing healthcare stocks, firstly, where did you get started and why in that space? I mean, that seems pretty obvious, but, at the same time, something else could have caught your interest.
Yeah, and so the first job that I got out of Wake Forest after I graduated with my MBA was at a buy-side firm, a money manager in Charlotte, North Carolina. We managed about $400 million, and it was me and the portfolio manager. And the portfolio manager, his previous role was as a buy-side analyst, and he covered industrial equipment. So he had a pretty strong background on the cyclical industries, consumer staples, cyclicals, industrial equipment, energy, those kind of things, kind of like the old economy. And when I started with this firm, it was called Eastover. When I started with Eastover back in 2000, or actually 1999, of course, in 1999, I was 26 years old. And so I had a pretty good grasp on technology and the internet and, the media and things like that. Just being 26, I was always very interested in computers and technology and things like that. And then obviously having a background in science, we divvied up the workload. He had a good understanding of the cyclical side of the business, and I had a good understanding of the secular side of the business. And so my concentration as my first job was on both energy. I'm sorry, was both on technology and healthcare. The more I kind of continued to delve into being a stock analyst, the more I realized that, where I really could add the most value either to a portfolio or as writing a research report was in my ability to kind of understand the science that some of these healthcare companies were doing. I mean, technology, if you don't have an engineering background, it's really kind of hard to stay up to speed with what a lot of these tech companies are doing. And so the bigger organization you get into and the more you kind of get advanced with your career, the more you just kind of find your niche and people start to understand, who you are and what you do and what you're good at. And so you kind of travel down that path. And when I left Eastover, I went to Zacks Investment Research to write sell-side reports. And it just turns out they were looking for a pharmaceutical analyst. So, that's what I started doing in 2003. I worked for Zacks as a pharmaceutical analyst. And again, using my background in science, using my background in finance, and trying to come at the writing of research reports from, both aspects of what makes a good stock. It has to have good science and it has to have good business. And so that's kind of how I got all thrown into this, but it kind of, like you said, makes sense.
And now for part two. So what are some of the characteristics that beginning investors should look out for in healthcare management, both on the positive and negative side?
Yeah, I mean, so what do I look for in analyzing small cap biotech stocks? I mean, I have what's known as the five C's of biotech investing. And it's on my website, and people can go and read that article, bionapscfa.com. There's a tab up top that says Bionap's five C's. And I talk about the five C's of biotech investing. And they are cash, catalyst, charisma, capital structure, and credibility. And those are the five things that you need before you even start to look at the science and whether or not the science makes sense and whether or not these are, this is a disease that needs treating or whether or not this is a drug that actually, you know, works for what the company thinks it's supposed to do. There's five easy things that you can check, when you're starting off your due diligence. Cash, well, that's pretty simple. You know, does the company have cash? I mean, again, you don't need to be a CPA or hold a CFA designation, to look at a financial statement. I mean, you can usually tell pretty quickly how fast the company is burning cash. And a lot of times companies give cash burn guidance. So, you know, the cash number is listed right on the balance sheet for every single publicly traded company. And the statement of cash flows, which is right after the balance sheet, is the statement of cash flows, and it shows where all the cash is going and how quickly they're spending it. So if a company doesn't have at least 6 months level of cash, but preferably more like around a year, well, you know, I'm not saying that's a name you want to completely avoid, but understand that a financing is probably going to happen at some point. So cash is very important. You've got to have cash. If you don't have cash, you're dead in the water. Catalysts are, again, pretty simple. You know, a stock needs a reason to go up. And you know, you may be enamored with a technology or a disease or a drug, but if you look at the upcoming events, right, biotech stocks move on data or on partnerships or on news from the FDA, et cetera. You know, these are a lot of times binary events, meaning they're either really good or really bad. And so, you know, unless this is a company that has drugs that are on the market and they're reporting quarterly earnings and providing you updates on these drugs, you know, if you're looking in small cap space, that doesn't happen. So you're waiting around for clinical data, or you're waiting around for a response from the FDA. If that doesn't look like it's going to happen within the next 6 to 12 months, then that's not a stock that's going to go anywhere. You know, one of the things I say is, why buy a stock today that you can buy in 6 months at the same price? You know, it's cost of opportunity of money. So a stock has to have catalyst, or else, you know, people are not going to pay attention to it. Charisma is, I like to say charisma was just a nice word that started with C that fit within my 5C, my 5C plan. But charisma basically means excitement, right? What are they doing that is exciting? What disease are they going after? There are exciting breakthroughs in science going on right now. There are diseases that clearly need advancements in medicine. You know, and then there are companies that are trying to repurpose drugs or trying to, you know, sell drugs that do the same thing as other drugs, and there's really no differentiation. And maybe their only strategy is to get the drug on the market and raise the price. Maybe their only strategy is to, well, we have a twice daily version on the market and we'd like to go to a once daily version. You know, that's not terribly exciting. You know, I don't see a whole lot of charisma to that. You know, if you have a new drug that treats breast cancer or a new drug that treats melanoma and you are being able to show improvement in survival for patients that have advanced cancers, where there has been no improvement in survival for the past decade, that's, you know, excitement. That's charisma. There's a company called Bluebird Bio that I currently own, that has a gene therapy to cure sickle cell and something called beta thalassemia. Curing a disease, you know, is charismatic in my view. So you got to look at this company and you got to say, is this something that's truly necessary and truly exciting? When you look at the story, you can say, wow, you know, hey, they're curing a disease that's a chronic disease that's been around for, you know, a thousand years. So that's, you know, that's exciting to me. The next two I'll talk about real quickly. Capital structure is simply, the structure of the equity on the balance sheet and all the outstanding shares. You know, there is no other industry that needs to raise cash as often as the biotech industry. And oftentimes, when companies need to raise cash, they are issuing shares. They're diluting their shareholders. Maybe they're issuing debt. Maybe they're issuing warrants. Maybe they have a ton of stock options. Maybe they have convertible preferred stock that has, you know, death spiral type financing terms, massively dilutive terms. You know, no biotech stock is going to do well if, you know, the balance sheet is an absolute mess, and that's the capital structure. You have to be able to understand the capital structure of the company. And then credibility is basically just to look at the management. You know, is this a management team that has been successful in the past? Are they honest? You know, are they credible? Are they setting expectations and meeting those expectations? Are they over-promising and under-delivering, or are they under-promising and over-delivering? You know, there's no Angie's List for biotech CEOs, but there are guys that have been doing this for, you know, 15 years like myself, and longer, in the sense of a lot of sell-side and buy-side analysts that know, man, you know, this is a guy that's just totally full of it. or this is a CEO that has burned shareholders in the past and continues to burn shareholders, overpromises, underdelivers. No matter how good the science is, that's not something that you want to invest in. Or you can look at the track record of the management team and say, this is a guy that just flat out executes. So this is a gal that just flat out delivers. When she says she's going to do this, she does it. You know, and look at the companies that she's built and sold in the past, and look at the businesses that this guy has run and sold or has executed on in the past. And so, you know, credibility goes a long way in the eyes of investors. I mean, like I said, you know, when we first started talking, a team, bad science and good business is a biotech company that tends to stick around longer than good science and bad business. So, you know, credibility is very important.
What investing experience would you say that you learned from the most? You know, both whether it was a positive or a negative, like what in your experience happened where you were like, okay, I need to really pay attention to this landmark moment in my investing career?
Yeah, geez, that's a good question. I think the thing, you know, that I've noticed, and I've been at this for 16 years, is that, you know, biotech companies tend to make mistakes. They all make the same mistakes. They all do poor financings. So look and see what are some poor financings that companies have done in the past. And if a company travels down that same path, highly dilutive offering, convertible, you know, warrants and notes that reset with, you know, with like I said, death, you know, death spiral is a term that, you know, that's often used. You know, if a company is traveling down that path, chances are it's going to be bad because it usually ends up bad. So give yourself an education on what are good financings and what are bad financings. Who are good people to invest money with and who are bad people to invest money with? You know, there's a term called vulture capital, right? Vulture to play on venture capital. There are venture capital firms that are vulture capital firms. And, you know, and so at all costs, try to avoid that sort of thing. You know, the other thing is learn from the mistakes that other companies have made when engaging with the FDA. Look and see what trials have successful companies run. What trials have failed that companies have done? Why have those trials failed? They're too small. They didn't dose long enough. They didn't dose enough dose. They dosed in the wrong patient population. They picked the wrong principal investigator. So there are a lot of reasons why clinical trials fail. And it's amazing to me to watch companies continue to make the same mistakes. With the FDA, what is the FDA saying about how to get your drug on the market for this disease? If the company is not doing that, I mean, there's no chance that they're going to get the drug. Look, the FDA has the final say So never battle the FDA. I mean, there's a saying in the market, which is don't fight the Fed, right? In biotech investing, it's don't fight the FDA. there's no point, right? If the FDA says do this, then do it. And if you don't do it, it's your own fault that, you know, as to why, you know, your drug is rejected or why your trial has failed. So, you know, those are the things that I think learn from the mistakes that other biotech companies have made in the past. Biotech stocks that are traveling down tend to continue to go down because it is so difficult to do drug development. It's difficult to get funding. It's difficult to bring drugs onto the market. And you know, it's a slippery slope. You know, the lower you're, if you need cash and the market is selling your stock because you need cash, you need to raise cash, and now you need to raise cash at lower prices because your stock is going down, and the more your stock goes down, the more dilutive the offering is when you go to raise cash. So be aware of that as an investor. And companies that have failed trials, but then say, well, you know, the trial failed, but we still think there's some good data here, so we're going to move forward anyway. Or, you know, the trial was, you know, the trial failed, but we have this subpopulation of patients where it worked, and so we're going to file for approval just to see what the FDA says. They're going to say no. That's what they do, right? So, you know, learn about these things that the FDA, learn about these mistakes that these pharmaceutical and biotech companies make, and then be aware of the fact that these companies are run by people, fallible people, and they all tend to make the same mistake. So if you make a mistake, write down the mistake that you've made and try to never make it again, because history always repeats itself with these companies. It's almost a given that these guys will all travel down the same path of continuing to make mistake after mistake, and that's why, like I said, there's 400 biotech companies, and maybe 10 of them are profitable.
So what are some resources that helps you when you're doing your research and due diligence? You know, do you have, and also maybe finding new ideas out there?
Yeah, I mean, Twitter is great. Twitter is great for exchanging ideas with people, for interacting with people. Where do I go for full material? Well, you know, SEC filings, company websites. It's amazing. You know, I talk to investors and they're looking at a biotech stock and yet they've never read the SEC filings. I mean, that's like building a house without a blueprint. I mean, it just doesn't, that's the first place you should go, is you should pull the annual reports or the quarterly reports, and you should read the filings because there's more information in there. Oftentimes, I'll write an article, and I will get questions via email or via Twitter or down in the comments section of the article I wrote where the answers are fully answered or fully explained in the SEC filings. I mean, it's like people don't want to dig and read themselves. They want, they want someone to just tell them the answer. Well, it's all in the SEC filings. The other thing you can do is you can look at PubMed, which is just what's called PubMed. You go on Google and search PubMed. It's a page that publishes all of the peer-reviewed journals and data for medical data. So, you know, if you're researching a disease or an indication and you want to know what the standard of care is and you want to know what the data for that is, it's all on PubMed. It's a great resource. It's after SEC filings. You know, if I'm writing a research report and I have Word open and I have Excel open where my model is and I have my browser open, my browser is open on the company's website. It's open on PubMed. It's open on it's open on the SEC's website, and it's open on clinicaltrials.gov, which is where all of the clinical trials, all the active and past clinical trials in the U.S. are posted. So between those four places, you have 95% of the information that you need, to do quality due diligence into a stock. You know, the other 5% you can get from, hopefully from the internet. I mean, I would never recommend anyone go on Yahoo Finance message board and start taking stock advice. But Twitter is good. There are smart people on Seeking Alpha. There are smart people on Who Trades. There are smart people on StockTwits. There are idiots on all of those pages, on all of those places. There are idiots on Twitter. But there are smart people on Twitter. And so, you know, find them, engage with them, and be part of the discussion. And I think, you know, you'll find that it's not as insurmountable as it seems to try to find winners in small cap biotech. I say that as I look at the Dow is now down 405 points. It's all doable, right? I mean, I have no special gift. I've just been doing this for 16 years, and I know where to look, and I've been doing it long enough that almost all of the questions that I ask, I know either where to find them or I already know the answer. So, it's not insurmountable.
So in closing, you've given a lot of advice, but what would you say is the main advice that you would give to new microcap investors who are looking at the healthcare industry?
Start small. Maybe start on paper. Do not put all of your assets into, I would say do not put more than 10% of your assets into one stock. Take a basket approach. Cut your losers early, okay, right? If you invest in a stock and it starts to go down, you have missed something. Understand that you have missed something, and the best thing that you can do is take a step back. It is painful to lose 10% in 3 days or in 2 days, but I guarantee most of the time you will look back at yourself and say, that was the best 10% I ever lost because it's now down 50%. Right? So cut your losers early. Let your winners ride. That is the other thing that amateur investors fail to do. They make 5 cents and they get excited and they go, woohoo, I just made 5 cents. You know, I made 10% and they're out. And meanwhile, you know, stocks that go down continue to go down. Stocks that go up continue to go up most of the time. It's a general rule of thumb. So start small. Be conservative. Do not put more than 10% of your money into any of these names. They could blow up at any given time. Continue to research and challenge, you know, everything that you own. Jim Cramer says 1 hour a week for each stock that you own. In biotech, it's an hour a day. I mean, you know, you've got to stay on top of these stories because they change so quickly. If you're wrong, if you don't understand something, if you're lost, if you're confused, get out. Again, if you start with $10,000, if you end up with $9,000 3 days later, you still have $9,000, right? If you stay in it and it just goes down and down and down and down, you may have $5,000 2 months later. So, you know, understand that. Don't be afraid to take a loss. I mean, what does Michael Jordan say? He's missed more shots than he's made. But hey, you know, the key is to make the misses less painful and make the winners the reason why you're doing this, which is to make a lot of money.
Okay, so my last question is, where can our audience go and find more information, both on social media and a little bit about your website too?
Yeah, so I mean, I love to engage with people on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at JNapodano, JNapodano. So I'm on, you know, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Seeking Alpha. I'm on StockTwits under the same JNapodano. My website is www.bionapcfa.com. You can connect with me there. You can ask me questions there. I've got, I've probably got 50 stocks that I've written on. You can dig through my website. My 5 C's of biotech investing is on there. If something is interesting to you, read it, research it, reach out. talk to people about it, and you know, and be part of the discussion, because you know, it's not a zero-sum game. I mean, you know, we can all make money in a stock, or we can all lose money in a stock. And you know, if you own something that someone else owns, then talk to them about it. You know, understand, make sure your thesis is their thesis. And if you're confused as to why, you know, you're losing money, and somebody's saying, well, here's why you're losing money, you know, chances are they're right, because you know, it takes a lot of experience to you know, to do this. And so there are places out there that can help you, and I'm certainly willing to help anyone that's out there.
Jason, thank you so much again for coming on to the podcast. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you all for tuning into the Planet Microcap podcast, and thank you, Jason, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast, go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Planet Microcap podcast, where we'll have our next week in review and have another exciting guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of StockNewsNow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap podcast. Have a great week, everyone.